welcome to Minor Rex. We are no longer the Pint and Click podcast. We are now the Minor Rex podcast. Still the same people coming from the same place, Des Plaines Public Library, still doing the same stuff. But we're just got a new name, got a new attitude, and we've got a crazy new subject today. Today we all made food and we're going to eat it and talk about it using cookbooks from the library, our most popular cookbooks that we could find. Some are very old, some are very new. But we're going to eat on the air. Hopefully no one talks with their mouth full, and we'll see how this goes. So we're going to start off. We've got an appetizer. We've got an entree. We've got a soup and a dessert. So we're starting with Tony, who made the appetizers. Tony, what did you make for us?
For an appetizer, I made something. Actually, both the things I made today were from the Oh She Glows cookbook by Angela Lydon. Over 100 vegan recipes to glow from the inside out. And it's one of the most popular cookbooks in the entire library. I think it ranks top 20, top 15. And what I made for everybody to try, I know your mouths are watering, is the Taco Fiesta potato crisps. They are little slices of russet potatoes that are toasted up in the oven, covered with a walnut-based taco meat, which is seasoned. And there is also some vegan sour cream on there, some green onions, and some salsa, just organic salsa. So enjoy.
They look fantastic.
Yeah.
Thanks.
So, Tony, how about you tell us a little bit more about the process of making it while we keep quiet and chew?
Sure. So it's actually a pretty quick prep time. I mean, it says prep time 25 to 30 minutes. But, you know, the longest thing is the cooking of the potatoes in the oven for about a half hour. I mean, you slice the potatoes up. One of the challenges was vegan sour cream, which that was the one problem I ran into from this entire experiment. The vegan sour cream, you have to obviously start with less water and work your way up. And I think I started with a little bit too much water and it was getting a little late at night when I was cooking. But that is based in with cashews, which are soaked overnight and blended with a few like lemon juice, salt, a little bit of apple cider vinegar. So the idea is there's a lot of creamy things that vegans love, and cashews are generally the solution for those creamy things. Mine is not so creamy. It's a little more runny, but if I did this correctly with a little bit less water, the sour cream would hopefully have turned out better. I've never actually had it before homemade, so didn't really know what I was looking for either, so that's part of the issue. But overall, simple recipe, things that you can really pick up easily from the store, spices that you would already have, such as, you know, ground cumin, chili powder, cayenne pepper, and olive oil. So that's all that goes into the walnuts. And so,
awesome. Yeah. I love it. It's a spicy little appetizer. I like that. I kind of like that it's ingredients I recognize. Mm-hmm. It's walnuts in the sour cream. Or no, it's cashews in the sour cream. It's walnuts are the quote-unquote meat. What do you guys think?
I agree. As I said before, I'm sometimes skeptical of vegan-type foods, especially if they're from like powders or chemical things that I don't recognize. But like Dave was saying, I know what all of this is, and it tastes delicious. I wouldn't know that was a vegan appetizer. Mm. And it's just a perfect amount of spice. I like the crunchiness of the potato underneath it. Yeah.
Yeah, it really delivers the spice in the first pow experience, and then all the other flavors come into play. It's super good.
Yeah. Well, when I tested it, I tried it with regular sour cream because that was what I had in my fridge. And I really enjoyed it because the sour cream actually kind of cools, you know, the heat from the beginning. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if I nailed the sour cream a little bit better, it wouldn't linger as like a spicy treat in your mouth for quite as long, maybe. So I'm getting that right now. But I also have like the hottest chili powder known to man because I don't know. I just, for some reason, that's the chili powder that's in my cabinet. So
yeah, I really like the crumbly texture of the nuts on top. Mm-hmm. It's really good.
And is this cookbook, is it all vegan recipes?
Mm-hmm. Yep, everything in here is vegan. The cashew cream / sour cream was in the back of the book in the appendix. And I have one more recipe that's also early stage meal. It's a side dish. I guess you could have it as an appetizer as well.
Yeah, let's go for it. What is that?
That is the marinated Italian mushrooms. These are marinated for just a few hours, but you can marinate them overnight. This particular batch was marinated overnight. And they are sautéed mushrooms with balsamic vinegar and... They're sautéed with shallots, which are, you know, these really aromatic onions. I started using them a lot recently because I do HelloFresh sometimes, and shallots are a common ingredient.
I like these a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot of garlic. There's a lot of garlic as well during the sautéing process. But after that, it's mainly just herbs. It's mainly herbs and the balsamic vinegar and oil that it marinates in. It's not a ton of salt. It's only, you know, just a quarter teaspoon of salt and black pepper. But I think that if you're doing this recipe, make sure you know you get great balsamic vinegar that you love, and it also has fresh Actually, the recipe I'm just noticing now uses flat leaf parsley. I'm pretty sure this is not flat leaf parsley. It's kind of bunched up. So, and I noticed at the store, there's Italian parsley right next to regular parsley. So first time I made it, didn't even use parsley. So you can definitely get away without it or substitute your favorite fresh herb in there.
Yeah, these are great. And I normally don't like mushrooms, so I was a little bit wary. I'm surprised I took one of the big ones and not just all small ones. But the balsamic is great. I would get up and get some more, but I'm kind of wired into the table right now.
I agree. I'm also usually not a mushroom person, so I also was wary, especially since these are, you know, like big, full mushrooms. They're not sliced or anything. But the balsamic really gets in there and permeates it, and it's really good. It has to be really good for, like, in the summer, I feel like, outside. It's really good.
Yeah, it's served chilled or just room temperature. Yeah.
And the parsley really kind of gives it, like, snaps of flavor over the balsamic. It's really good.
Mm-hmm. And these are really easy, in my opinion. I mean, you twist the caps off from the stems of the mushroom, and it's only a 10 to 15 minute cook and 10 to 15 minute prep. So
cool. Mm-hmm. All right, so what's that cookbook again?
So it's the Oh She Glows Cookbook by Angela Liddon. There's a really great section of vegetarian and vegan options at the library. So mm-hmm. come and browse in person, and you will be pleasantly surprised.
Awesome. So we'll move on to Jamie. Jamie, what did you make?
I made lasagna with turkey sausage, and this was from the Ina Garten Barefoot Contessa Family Style Cookbook. The subtitle is Easy Ideas and Recipes That Make Everyone Feel Like Family. And I chose this one because I recently had a daughter. She is 4 months old, and my time has decreased dramatically for, you know, things like making food. So I thought this one might be a good one. And I chose the lasagna recipe because I love lasagna, but I don't really have, like, a go-to lasagna recipe that I always choose. So this one was interesting, I thought, because it uses sweet Italian turkey sausage, but with the casings removed. Kind of squeamish around meat, so I had my husband remove all the casings from the sausage. I just came in and mushed it up after he had slit them all open. And then it uses goat cheese and fresh mozzarella. It doesn't use a lot of, like, the bag sprinkle shredded cheese. And it also used an interesting way of using the noodles, which is not boiling them beforehand, but just soaking them for 20 minutes in hot water. And I never done that before, but it makes the noodles more like al dente in the lasagna. I think depending on how you like the structure of your noodles, that could be good or bad. I haven't tried it yet, but I also noticed that it was less saucy than I usually make my lasagna. Like, it's usually like running with sauce, and this one wasn't. So that is what I'm interested to taste when I take my own bite.
Yeah, go right ahead. This is great. I love the cheeses. Like I said, there's not too much cheese, which I would also enjoy. But nonetheless, like, mm-hmm. I'm enjoying this now with the goat cheese and the fresh mozzarella. Would you say this was difficult to prepare?
I wouldn't say it was difficult, but it did take a long time.
Sure.
And I was not expecting that because in the book, it doesn't really say how long it takes. I looked it up online because I forgot to take my book home with me when I was making it last night. And it said, prep 20 minutes, cook an hour and 35 minutes. Mm. And usually, I'm a baker. I bake. So usually if it says prep 20 minutes, bake an hour and 35 minutes, that means I pop it in the oven. It only takes me 20 minutes to prepare. And then I just don't think about it for that hour and a half. But this, a lot of was like hands-on, stirring, simmering, things like that. So except for half an hour in the oven, the rest of it, like, I was doing things. And my husband was watching my daughter, and, like, she went to bed and stuff, so I had time to do that. But I would not normally have an hour and a half to make a meal on a weekday night with a baby. So I think, like, while it would be good if you have time on a weekend or something, because, you know, lasagna is, like, a crowd pleaser, and kids usually would like it and stuff. And it wasn't – none of it was difficult. It was just chopping and throwing things and layering things together. But it was not what I would consider like a weeknight kind of thing, which is how these recipes were kind of put forth as. So that was the only thing I'd be skeptical of.
Would you be able to compartmentalize any part of the recipe to maybe make beforehand and then throw it all together and bake it for half an hour?
Like something? Some of the stuff, like the chopping of the herbs and mixing with the ricotta and stuff, you definitely could do beforehand, and then like the herbs would kind of seep into the cheese and things like that. The chopping the onions, you definitely could do beforehand. But it is a lot of, like, letting the onions cook and then the garlic cook and then the meat cook and stuff. So that stuff you can't really prep
flavor
that.
Melding.
Yeah. Exactly.
I love how it fits together. And the Italian turkey sausage, it's, I don't know, I love when you can distinctively taste the different parts of a lasagna like this and when the noodles really stand out. So this is, like, how I like lasagna noodles. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, the consistency of the noodles is fantastic.
I'm excited for the podcast to end in a few minutes, and then I'm going to go get more of this. I promise you that. So what was the cookbook?
The cookbook, again, was the Ina Garten, the Barefoot Contessa Family Style Cookbook. And it was one of the top five cookbooks. So I think, I mean, the Barefoot Contessa is very popular.
Yeah.
And I think with a lot of families in the area, that would be something that you'd want to be able to go to, foods that your kids would eat that aren't too difficult. They have a specific section that's more on kid-friendly foods, but I think most of the foods are like family-friendly, like chicken parmesan or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I would go online and check to see how long it actually takes you on her website. But like for this one, all the reviews are really good. So good, maybe not as quick as I would want with a family.
Awesome. All right, I'm next. And I checked out Polish Cooking. That is the name of the book. I chose it because it's old. That's why it has so many checkouts here at the library. And it is definitely old. It's only from the 90s. It's not that old, but it's got our old address on it from the library. It's the Graceland address, not the new address. And it's covered in the dessert section is covered in what looks like drips of frosting and things like that. But I made bigos, which is a traditional Polish stew. It is basically sauerkraut and pork, and then like that's it. But it's like every kind of pork you can make, you can find. There's sausage, there's bacon, there's country rib, there's also sauerkraut and cabbage, all in a beef broth. So get excited. I didn't warn you, but there are whole peppercorns in there. So if you're not into that and you bite into one, I'm sorry, but that's what the recipe called for. So
yeah, also, I'm sorry, I'm not actually vegan. I just cooked from a vegan cookbook, and that's why I'm able to taste this, and I give you a lot of props for it. It's very, very good.
Thank you.
It is so much more than just, as you mentioned, sauerkraut and pork. It's, I mean, it is, but that's just the beauty of it. It's so structured, and the peppercorns are actually a great surprise.
Yeah.
They add a great depth and dimension.
Awesome. I feel great. I was here in the morning at work, and I went home and made this for about 3 hours. It was a lot of chopping, a lot of running around, a lot of frying this and putting it in and frying that and putting it in and frying it all. Frying all, you had to stew the pork and then pull it out and then cut it up and then fry it and then put it back in. The instructions were very strange because they just said simmer for an hour, then do all this stuff, then simmer for an hour and do all this stuff and simmer for an hour. And I'm like, is that the same hour? Is it 3 hours? I wasn't sure. So I went for the 3 hour approach. Mm. So,
well, it has a punch of flavor. So probably that was like
the way to do it.
Yeah. Because when you think of like a cabbage soup, you think about that as like, oh, that's what they would feed to prisoners, or it's just like, it sounds like not delicious. But this is so good and really flavorful and just like, the bacon is just really giving it that umami-ish type of flavor. It's really good.
It does. It has the been on the pot for the majority of the day type of feel to it, taste to it.
Yeah.
It's like an all-in-one dish, and like your whole meal is in the bowl right there, you know, your sides and your entree. So it's terrific.
Yeah. I'm really impressed by the variety of meat. Adds like that texture that I love in a good soup or in a good, really, meal, where the cabbage is almost like the noodle of the soup in this case. Mm-hmm. And it's like, so it's got everything. It's got multiple flavors and the texture that I really look for. I don't love like dumpling soups, for example, because I don't like that soft texture or like oatmeal as very much.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something in every bite in this one, you know.
Could you repeat the name of this again?
Bigos, B-I-G-O-S. It is the easiest word to pronounce in this entire book. I assure you of that. My wife is Polish. Her mother is Polish. So I hear the language often throughout my week, and I will not dare to say any other word from this book other than Polish cooking and bigos, because I know it's wrong. You try to say it right, you try to Americanize it, and it's absolutely wrong every time, and I get funny looks once in a while when I try. But that's also only half of it. The recipe in the book said serves 12 to 14.
Wow.
And I could have halved it, but I didn't want to because that's what the book said. So that's what I did. Mm-hmm. So I left half of it at home to overwhelm my wife when she gets back.
So how much hands-on time was there? It sounds like a pretty involved process.
So it was kind of easy at the beginning because it was like simmer the sauerkraut and simmer the cabbage separately and then combine them after an hour. So that time I spent chopping all the sausage and chopping the bacon. The second hour was fry the sausage, put it in, fry the bacon, put that in, pull out the meat that was in there at the beginning with the sauerkraut and chop it up and then fry it and then put that back in. So that hour was nonstop. Wow. And then it's it, and then simmer one more hour. So that last hour is, I didn't do any work. It was an intense second hour, but the first hour was easy and the last hour was easy. But it makes quite a bit for the amount of work I did. So I feel good about that.
I'm a big believer in simmering, flavor melding, and just time taken, I guess. I think that's what I like about cooking is that you kind of earn the flavor and you can experience it as you do it, according to the dynamics of where you live, where, you know, certain smells rise. You know, sometimes at the top of the stairs in my house, you can smell it the best of what someone's making. And I just really enjoy that. Or coming home, sticking something in a crock pot for a while and then coming home and just getting the blast of what was going on. And that's definitely an element in this dish.
Yeah, my whole house smells like bacon right now.
Well, the whole conference room, probably half the hallway.
I know. We're going to have the directors in here in a minute demanding to know what we've done.
Yeah.
All right, then. Moving right along to dessert. Joel, what do you have for us?
I utilized a recipe from Ree Drummond, the Pioneer Woman. I've cooked recipes from her before, and I like it because her food is accessible. They're easy to make. When you read the recipe, she delivers a little bit of humor to it as well. And these are called Knock You Naked Brownies. But there's a huge caveat in that I did not follow the recipe by necessity completely, so I had to go off on my own a little bit. And I tried to include as many of the ingredients as possible, but it's not made in the same way that it is in the actual cookbook, but I used the recipe as a guidelines. The first thing, she recommends you buy a German chocolate cake mix, 18 and a half ounces. When I went to the store to buy that, there were no 18 and a half ounce boxes of cake. There were 15 and a half ounces. And normally you can calculate by two, whatever, but how are you going to measure ounces of powder and whatever? So I went with a brownie mix of cookie and brownie together, I guess colloquially known as brookies. And so that's where, like, it left the rails then in the store. But I thought I could try to make it work. But due to the consistency of the brownies versus the cake mixture, it just wasn't compatible. It did call for pecans. I put that in there. But it wanted you to take half the brownies and to put this caramel sauce in the middle and then cook the other half of the brownies on top. And the way things went last night, it didn't happen that way. They're also supposed to put semi-sweet chocolate morsels in there in the middle. They ended up going on top of the brownies. But then I actually did do the caramel sauce and I mixed it together on the stovetop with evaporated milk, which is what the recipe entailed. I think it was relying upon you to bake that, and that would solidify it a little bit more. So I ended up putting the caramel sauce, which smelled really good, on top of the brownies, and I stuck it in the refrigerator overnight, hoping that would gel it. It did not happen. So it turns more of like from a frosting into more of a sauce. I haven't had a bite of it yet, but there was actually even a concern in my head. I'm thinking it would be edible. But stuff happens when you're cooking, right? Like it gets really hard or something like that. So
it tastes great.
Okay.
Yeah, don't worry. Don't be nervous. Okay.
The other thing I learned is that when you put morsels, you know, the chocolate chips on top of something, maybe take it out of the oven and away from maybe on the stovetop. Don't stand, pull the tray out, and then try to put the morsels on in the oven because chocolate is a weird way of melting when it's in direct contact with direct heat. And it was just kind of funny because I'm like, what am I doing? And I'm trying to stick the morsels on. And while it's in the oven and I'm burning the top of my hand, which is making me drop the morsels. And so it's like uneven allocation of the chocolate. So it's, I don't know if you can tell, I do have fun with this. And I have fun kind of like laughing at myself because, the other thing is, I came home and it said the first direction is grease a 9x9 pan. We don't have a 9x9 pan. So I thought, well, this container that we normally use for meatloaf is a round, not a square. I'm looking at it and thinking this would work. So I put everything in there. And then I read the back of the brownie mix which I ended up just making the brownies as it would on the back of the box because that's the actual stuff I was working with. And then I would try to incorporate elements from the Reed Drummond recipe into what I was making. So it's kind of like a blend. But that said, it's okay to use a 9x13 pan, which I did have. So I had to take everything out of the meatloaf pan and back into the 9x13. It was like multiplying dishes to wash is essentially what I was doing. And it was a little frustrating, especially at night when, you know, it's at the end of the day. And but like I said, it's I was able to laugh at myself and I had a good time.
Good. Well, it's great. I want more.
Yeah. Don't I like it because it's like crunchy but also chewy and you get different aspects in there with the nuts and everything. So, and I'm a big fan of the oozy caramel, so I am fine that it did not solidify. It has like a, you know, like the sauce you put on ice cream consistency over it, so it's good.
Well, the recipe wanted you to unwrap 60 caramel candies.
Oh my goodness.
Put it in a glass bowl and melt it over simmering water. Like on top of the glass.
Sure,
on top
yeah,
of
yeah.
The, mm-hmm. I'm in the grocery store at 9:30 at night. No help from work. And I'm like, you know what? I think the, as you said, the ice cream, I saw the caramel topping. Mm-hmm. I thought, I'm just going to use this. So, and then I went to the caramel candies. I checked a bag of Werther's, and they have about 180 pieces in that bag, and it was 34 ounces. The whole bag. So I figured, okay, so I essentially I need 11 and a third ounces of caramel. And I checked that it was Smucker's. I don't know if we're allowed to mention. But it was 14 and a half ounces of caramel sauce. So I figured, there you know you what, go. More the better. Mm-hmm. You know, why melt caramel when you can have caramel sauce right there? Mm-hmm. And then you could actually microwave the bottle. Make sure you remove their foil wrapping. That almost did not happen.
Oh, goodness.
So it could have been more eventful. But if you microwave the plastic bottle for 30 seconds, it'll warm up the caramel sauce. And, you know, that's when you put it over the ice cream. But I did mix it with evaporated milk. So,
well, I think you should try it because I really love this brownie, actually. I feel like if you're a fan of brownies and you're tired of just having the same brownie, this has a lot of things to it. Like Jamie was saying, texture. Mm-hmm. It has with the nutty texture. And the sauce on the top is completely unique. And I don't know that I mean, if you ever try the recipe in the other way, like maybe I'd want to try it, but I think this is great. I think adding like a sauce on the top of a brownie is actually, I think it works here. It feels like more elegant because you're getting something with sauce on it, but mm-hmm. it's still familiar mm-hmm. because it's a brownie. So
it's more like a dessert rather than yeah. like picnic food or something.
Yeah.
The other thing I like about Reed Drummond, I mentioned she has a lot of humor in what she makes. It's very country, very family oriented. And she mentioned – it's something like this where the title of the dish is called Knock You Naked Brownies. But she has in parentheses at the end of the paragraph about the Knock You Naked Brownies. For the record, I have no clue as to the origin of the recipe name, but that's probably just as well. That's just like a sample of like her humor. I just appreciate – you can tell she enjoys cooking and she wants to share it with you. So.
And that looks like a gorgeous cookbook, too. Mm-hmm. I'm
it
looking
is.
At, like, step-by-step pictures on one side and final pictures on the other. Like, so,
right.
like, you get to see what you're making, but you also get to see how to do it in case
process.
Something's confusing. Like,
and then she, at the very end, has keeping it real, and she shows, like, the destruction of her kitchen.
Yeah.
Nice. Of all the dishes.
Dirty pans and,
the,
and all that.
Exactly. So, and that's, I think, the first recipe I ever followed of hers was for, I believe, Sloppy Joe, which we still use, actually. My wife made it last night. And there's a picture of her hands, and she's like, look at those demon fingers. You know, and just, it's on her blog, but it's just a joie de vivre when you're cooking. It's just kind of fun. She kind of encapsulates the joy of cooking for your family or cooking for yourself. Or,
sure. I wonder if this may be the first time I've cooked a recipe from a cookbook. Almost all of mine either come from the internet. Mm-hmm. That's got to be like 80-90% of my recipes where I find them. Or like scraps of paper that my mom had lying around or things like that. But the cookbook with no video to show me what to do was a new experience for me.
And you don't have to be afraid that you're going to get sauce in your keyboard mm-hmm. and stuff up your laptop. My laptop always says like a dusting of flour inside
yeah.
it.
Yeah, my computer is luckily like right near my kitchen, mm-hmm. so I can just like lean into the other room.
Tap, tap.
And,
yeah.
Yeah, take a look at the screen and lean mm-hmm. back into the kitchen.
when we do have family gatherings, you know, for Easter or Christmas, I do use something out of a cookbook just to really, I kind of challenge myself to follow it. And it usually involves smoking or grilling meat. Mm. So in that regard, I made a really great chopped pork mustard recipe that out of a book that was just probably my favorite thing I ever made out of a book.
Yeah, I feel like I've gotten burned from the internet before, so I no pun intended. But
sure.
Like actually ended up with a recipe that just did not translate to my kitchen for whatever reason, and that happens so much less frequently if I'm using a book to cook from.
There's so many people who vet it before it gets published versus like if you're reading it on someone's blog,
right?
Just one person made it, you know? Mm-hmm. And usually if I do something from like a blog, I'll look at the comments to make sure that it's working out well. But yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's the flip side of that is looking in the comments to see how the recipe can be improved. Mm-hmm. If they recommend you use an ingredient and you're like, you know, that sounds great, but except for that one ingredient, someone else in the comments is like, hey, I made it with this and I completely threw out this ingredient that you don't like, right? And you threw that ingredient out and I put this in and you're like, wow, that sounds great. Let me just modify that.
Like the crowdsourcing all these different like bits of information that usually would come down to you through your family or something, you know, or, you know, from your community. Yeah.
And then there's always the comment about like, oh, my kids are so picky and they eat this right up, you know.
Yeah.
It's kind of, you know, interesting to study not only the recipe, but how people interact with it, I guess. So that's kind of a benefit, I guess, of the internet recipe. The other thing I like to do with that is if I'm looking to make chili, but maybe this time I want to incorporate chocolate, you know, like a good chocolate chili recipe. It's kind of hard to do that with a cookbook, you know, to find that. So, but it's so easy on the the internet to like, oh, this one looks great. And then they look at the pictures.
So cookbooks are actually like one of the highest circulating things we have on the nonfiction floor. They promote it constantly for that reason. And the selection is huge. When I do my search by Dewey Decimal, I usually remember the first three and then one or two of the other ones. But if you're looking for a cookbook here at the library, you've got to nail down because there's got to be thousands of cookbooks up there.
Right, just hit the 641, right?
There you go,
and that's it. Just head to that area and get ready. So it's actually a whole different section.
Yeah.
On the top of the in the fourth floor, and you kind of the new cookbooks, you just walk and get to the top of the stairs, turn to your right, and they're right over there.
Yeah, and it's a great browsing collection, too. Yeah. And it's great to have at the library because these books are all, you know, expensive for good reason because a lot of research goes into them and the photography to print them, you know, full-color pages. So they are expensive, so it's great that you can come here and just check them out for free. Go home and test out a couple, see if you like them.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I forget if someone's mentioned it, but yeah, the serendipity of being able to run into a recipe next to the recipe that you were going to make and not expecting it just because you're flipping through a page. The internet doesn't quite work like that.
Right.
It tends to show you more of the same. So I know I probably wouldn't have chosen this mushroom dish if I didn't get it from a book.
Sure.
But,
There's definitely something to be said, too, about personalizing. Something like a recipe speaks to you. Like I grew up near Hershey, Pennsylvania. And, you know, when I'm picking out the chocolate morsels or whatever, I'm like, okay, where's that Hershey's? I'm not going to use just store-bought. I want to use Hershey's and, like, kind of Pennsylvania-fy it somehow. or, you know, someone like this person in the cookbook would use this for, you know, tailgating at your favorite college football.
Yeah.
You know, and you kind of like, oh, okay, well, if they use it for this school's, you know, then definitely I should try that because that kind of gives you a connection to it. And that might be the impetus to try that recipe. So I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, my husband is Jewish and I'm Japanese. So we always are on the lookout for Jewish-Japanese recipes, which surprisingly there are a few, or just like ways that we can like make weird hybrid things. We're talking about like, what if we made matzo ball soup with miso broth? Like, would that be good or would that be weird? So we have a lot of experiments on deck that we want to try.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody eats.
Yeah.
You know, and it's great time spent with a family.
Yeah.
You know, if you have kids, like, figure out how they can – I mean, it's so easy to chop stuff up and like, okay, now it's time to dump this in. You know, put this spice in. Okay, now you do the cumin, you do the whatever.
Yeah.
And that's just a fun aspect of it too.
I mean, I described it as work when I was making my recipe, but the smells were amazing. So it was quite an experience to just be able to – have an afternoon like that, or just like, now I'm smelling sausage, now I'm smelling sauerkraut.
Well, and on a weekend, it might be, you know, not work.
Yeah, you know, maybe next like, if I ever have guests over, maybe I won't make it first and then serve it to them. I'll be like, no, you need to sit in the room.
Right.
Let it permeate
and
around.
Enjoy the process. You don't have to participate, but just let each smell hit you every 20 minutes.
Well, and make a few themed appetizers, too.
There you go, to get it started.
You know, maybe for the next esports competition at your place.
There you go.
I thought it was interesting because I don't cook very often, and I usually bake. And the process of cooking, which I haven't done maybe for like a year, versus baking, is like there's some similar aspects. You know, I'm following a recipe and putting all my ingredients together. But with baking, you don't taste as you go along. You kind of like shove something in the oven. I'm like, I hope this will be fine.
Sure.
I don't know until it literally is finished if it's going to be okay.
Definitely.
Or not. Yeah. Whereas when I'm cooking, I get a sense if it's going okay. I can taste things as I go along. So I thought that was really interesting to see, like, oh, I can keep adjusting as I go. Like, oh, I tasted it. I think it's kind of salty, so I'm going to pull back on the salt in this other part. Whereas in a cake, I'm like, oh, now when I'm slicing it and serving it, I'm like, wait, that's way too sweet, but what can I do? So.
Right. It's more forgiving. Cooking is a little bit more forgiving than baking, which is funny because my wife is a baker. She says she doesn't think she cooks very well, but you know, she's fine with baking. It's she could do that with her eyes closed, but cooking, she says she has a lot of trouble with. But it's just funny that baking is actually harder than cooking.
But I find cooking harder too than baking as well for some reason. Yeah, I think it's the idea of the stove and like having to know. You know, like with the oven, it's like, oh, it's supposed to be X degrees, and I know I have to do that. It's very precise in the instructions. Where with cooking, until browned, until no longer pink.
Right.
How pink is too pink? I was like, is this pink? Is it not pink anymore? Is this translucent? Is it opaque? Mm-hmm. You have to judge your own. And if you don't have that type of background, it can be difficult because you're making judgment calls.
Or like when I was simmering my stew, the stew kept getting higher and higher. There was more and more mass being dumped in there. And so like I'm a little knowledgeable. So I'm like, all right, I need to turn up the heat so it continues to simmer. Because if you dump something in and leave the heat the same, then you're going to lose temperature. So I'm like turning it up. And then I'm watching TV for a bit. And all of a sudden it's rolling, boiling. I'm like, whoa. Turn that back down. We've achieved it.
Yeah, when I was trying to solidify the caramel topping, I just figured, well, let's just turn up the heat and see what happens. Try to boil off, right, the evaporated milk. Well, when you have sugar involved, there's a little bit of a different dynamic, and it started like – it was like foam. And it shot up, and I quick turned it down, and it was like – it was within a millimeter of like just blasting over – and it came back down, but man alive.
For a second there.
Yeah, it was. So it could have been more eventful in that regard, too. So
sure.
Yeah, I feel like I was paying a lot of attention during the stovetop cooking part. Since I don't cook, I was trying to really like not overcook things or anything. By the time we got to the layering part, I kind of like stopped paying attention as much. And I was like, oh, this is the easy part. I was cutting my cheese and everything and layering it. And my husband was helping me like hold the pan while I was layering things on. And he's like, is there going to be space for another layer of noodles? And I was like, no, we put all the layers of noodles in. And he's like, there's only one layer of noodles in the lasagna. And I realized I had forgotten to put the second layer in, gotten distracted, and then layered the second layer of everything again. So there was just like two layers of all the sauces and the cheeses and just one dinky thing of the pasta. So I was like, okay, let's see if I can scrape all of this out. So I'm like using a spoon to scrape it and try to shove the pasta back in there.
That's fun.
But see, with cooking, that's fine. It's kind of all mushy in there anyway. With baking, if I had mixed up my steps, that would have never flown.
Sure. So. You fixed it. You were able to fix it.
I was
able to
fix
recover.
It. Yeah.
But there are recipes in the dessert section of this where, you know, it's mix until smooth or mix until – I mean, just – I am baffled by those. I'm like, how smooth is smooth?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
That comes down to, like, what you're comfortable with, I guess.
Right.
I always watch my mother baking and not really cooking as much. So I was like, oh, like, this is clearly, you know, stiff peaks. Whereas pink to brown, what is mauve? Right. Like, that is unclear.
Yeah, stiff peaks was mentioned in here. I was just like, I'm not going there. I don't know what that is. Last time, my wife, she made something for Christmas, and she whipped out this contraption. And I'm like, what? It was a powder sifter. And it had, like, a trigger thing on it. And I was like, what is So it is. It's what you're comfortable with and what you've seen. And it was in my own house, and I didn't even know what it was. So,
yeah, and I think the things that I was cooking this time were like – it was baking something, which I bake vegetables all the time, and sauteing something, which sauteing is like, you know that it's going to get to a point where it takes the water out of a vegetable. And I think a lot of it has to do with smell, and like you, at a certain point you don't need timers, you know?
Right.
And that's one of the cool things I think about really any recipe is just trying to do it by feel after you've done it a few times, because yeah, it's like, come over here and smell this. This smells amazing. Or like the mushrooms are finally at that point. I don't know. I think just paying attention to dishes and doing dishes multiple times, like I think that's one of my favorite things, is because then you start modifying them. The recipes start growing. You start trying things,
mm-hmm.
like trying regular sour cream in a vegan recipe or whatever, you know.
Yeah, it is. It's about modification.
Yeah,
I admit that I have never tried a recipe without any like little bit of modification.
Sure. Mm.
I don't know. Just following the script all the way just kind of, I guess, it runs against me.
Yeah. From the story that you've told of making this, I can kind of start picturing, but it seems like you have a lot of fun too, so it's worth it.
All right, well, I want to eat the rest of this food, so maybe let's call it there. Thank you, Jamie. Thank you, Tony. Thank you, Joel. Thank you, Charlie. I'm Dave, and that was Minor Recs.